And we're back on the Morning Zoo. Oh no, this is .NET Conf. My boss is here. Now the whole thing is gone to heck. How's it going, sir?
Awesome.
Are you trying to go with the blue polo now? Is that there's a new Scott?
This is the Visual Studio polo here.
Is that?
You know, blue Visual Studio, blue theme.
I thought this was some kind of a clever way for you to try to get promoted because the red polo seems to have worked out nicely for other Scott. So now you're taking the blue polo to the top.
I should do the entire closet full of blue polos, is what you're recommending.
I'm just saying. That's actually what I've been to his house. It is just literally a walk-in closet with nothing but red polos.
I was in a meeting with him earlier this week, and he's like, yeah, there's no problem. I can have a red shirt on Wednesday and Saturday, if necessary.
He has no problem. He's got enough.
He's got lots of red shirts.
Cool. So we are the lesser Scots.
Yes.
Also kind of the collective noun is Scots the lesser. And when you are in a meeting with the great Scott, they refer to us as the lesser Scots, and they say, what do the lesser Scots think about that? So this is the part of the presentation where we find out what we think about that. Specifically, what does an open source Microsoft web platform look like? Kind of taking where Habib went and going maybe a little bit deeper and showing some demos.
Yeah.
And hearing what you think, because you're the boss. So generally, when we talk about .NET and the future of .NET, it really is a very different message than you've heard before. It's any app, any platform, your choice of languages, and your choice of deployment platform. We just want you to be happy.
Right.
And the road ahead, we hope, will be paved with a lot of innovation and a lot of open source. And I think that what was once a big monolithic base class library will hopefully be a thriving ecosystem with lots of different libraries from lots of different people. And if there's a particular library that rises to the top, then the community and Microsoft itself will start using that library.
Right. And I think the goal is to make sure we don't build the monolithic thing again. We'd rather have everything sit on top of a small kernel versus having a big monolithic thing again.
Right, exactly. Thinking about .NET Core, you know, in the historical context, if we take a look at this slide here, there have been varying levels of base class libraries, some quite large, like on the Windows desktop, others rather a bit smaller, like Windows Phone, different application models. And while you've got concept compatibility with things like C# and XAML and HTML and Model View Controller, you've got lots of different runtimes and lots of different frameworks, and you end up with this siloed model. And I think we've taken this as far as it really needs to go.
Well, remember, ASP.NET 4 and Windows Desktop are actually the same thing.
So that's a very valid point.
They're technically the same runtime.
That's why I made those the same size.
And
but yeah, your point is valid.
So more of the verticals were the phone and the store, and now ASP.NET 5 is becoming a new vertical.
So the goal here is a tidier, a smaller base class library that's broken up into NuGets, and we'll talk about NuGet and how that relates. But also different, you know, clean app models as well as other app models. Someone else might come up with an app model that's a great idea, and you know, that'll be something. Someone else might have another runtime like Mono on Raspberry Pi or whatever. So you've got the core CLR, the .NET Native runtime, as well as other potential future runtimes.
Some folks might ask, you know, why not the monolithic? Why not have the big framework like Java or .NET 4.5.x? Mm-hmm. We have all this stuff in it. We were running some cool benchmarks just 2 weeks ago that were really exciting. We were looking at what if you take an MVC application today, mm-hmm. running on .NET 4.5, and you cold boot it. What is that? We were using Music Store. Mm-hmm. What would you guess a cold boot of MVC Music Store takes today?
15, 20 seconds?
We were saying about 13 and a half.
Okay.
So we have that same application running on .NET Core. And just think of this. Think of it from this standpoint. How much stuff do we have to load just to boot everything up?
Yeah.
What would you think we could get .NET Core, ASP.NET, MVC Music Store to boot up on?
5 seconds?
We're about 4.5 right now. Okay. There's another second and a half that we know we can get out of it. So we think we can get ourselves in the sub 3 second range.
Seriously.
So basically 10 seconds.
And when we say cold boot, you know, we're talking about
reboot the machine.
Right.
And then hit the application for the first time. And so the .NET framework's not been loaded. You know, none of that stuff's been pre-warmed up on the machine at all.
Right. So they're doing complete, really, really deep profiling sessions throughout the life cycle. I was actually standing next to David Fowler and Lewis during one of those sessions, and they were like, you know, if I can get those 30 milliseconds back,
yes,
that level of attention to detail.
And that's one of the goals of, you know, breaking it down and being on a smaller runtime instead of being on the monolithic runtime or the big
runtime. And it's interestingly, even though in the past the ASP.NET team, of course, has access to the .NET source code, it wasn't exactly super convenient. But now they have their own private build of the core CLR sitting right there. They can literally, and you can, trace all the way down to the metal and back, yep, in a way that is much more convenient than was ever possible before. And they can potentially make changes in deep level configuration startup type stuff when before that would have required meetings and talking to other groups. So the benefits of open source are actually helping us organizationally.
Yeah. And we by the way, we've done these investigations before. Mm-hmm. I always like to say that when a particular problem becomes important to us, that's when we as a collective whole all fight together and try to make it better.
Yeah,
At points it's been, what is your request per second versus what your startup time is versus your memory.
Right.
We focused on different parts of those problems at different points in time over the history of the .NET framework. Mm-hmm.
So the other thing to point out is the fact that NuGet is everywhere. And this is meaning that the frameworks are NuGet, the libraries are NuGet, the base class library is itself going to be NuGet packages, hopefully not that many. I just filled that up.
That's a lot.
It is a lot. But also the .NET core stuff itself. So the core CLR is present. And when we look at the demo, we'll see what that looks like. And it's not the big 250 megs in a reboot. Let's all warn IT that we're about to install a new .NET framework.
It's 10 megs.
Yeah. It is. I think it's more like, I've got like a 11 or 12 meg or...
It's about...
Depends on the zip file.
If you start adding MVC and stuff on top of it, you'll end up with about 12 megs.
Yeah, yeah.
If you do multiple architectures, you'll double and be 24. But, you know, your one machine only needs one architecture. Mm-hmm.
Now, we saw the marketing stuff that Habib showed, this idea that the .NET 2015 kind of wave of technologies. But the thing that I wanted to point out was that while .NET Framework 4.6 is on Windows, we know that Core 5 is going to be on Mac and Linux and Windows. We're sharing a lot of common functionality here. So that means the next generation jitter. That means all of the new things that are going on in Roslyn and the compiler platform and all the innovation in C# 6.
Applies everywhere.
Applies everywhere.
Yeah, that's a big point. Is a lot of times when you start seeing like a .NET Core 5, people's assumption is, well, are you still working on .NET 4.6?
Yeah, yeah.
And the answer is, oh yeah, we're doing a lot of work in .NET 4.6. I mean, you know, our team is bringing the Roslyn compilers up into web forms and MVC on .NET 4.6. And we have a ton of other things we're doing as well. We're doing HTTP2. So we'll continue to, you know, invest in both areas.
Someone was showing me, tell me about this. Someone was showing me something where it was web forms and the new Roslyn stuff. And it was a provider that plugged Roslyn into web forms?
Yeah, it's called a CodeDOM provider.
What's the story about that?
So, when Roslyn came out, the first thing we started asking ourselves is how do we put Roslyn into the 4.6 framework for web applications. Mm-hmm. And we actually have a provider model. That's how we actually supported some other languages. You know, a couple years ago, we were playing with things like Ruby and stuff. Mm-hmm. And so just by adding a provider to your existing MVC 5 ASP.NET Web Form 4.5 application, mm-hmm, we can replace the compiler with Roslyn. So it's basically you add a single NuGet package to your application, and we swap the compiler out from the one built in the framework, mm-hmm, to use the out-of-band one, Roslyn, giving you the latest C# features.
So Roslyn is the compiler platform. That's the open source compiler platform that is kind of an in-memory compiler as a service. And in the past, if you had like an ASPX page, we're actually going to shell out to CSC, the compiler, and go and compile that stuff.
Yeah, people don't know that. That's actually what's happening. When you're actually running an ASP.NET application today, mm-hmm, when you hit a page for the first time, we actually shell out to CSC, run it. We save the files into a temporary folder, and then we load them up, and that's kind of how, yeah, you know, nobody's aware of that. Way back.
Well, I think some of us have spent a good amount of time in temporary ASP.NET files.
David Ebo, 2 years ago, when Roslyn was first thinking of coming out, mm-hmm, he played with an ASP.NET application and said, hey, what if I put like 10,000 files in an application? What is the time to actually have the compiler shell out and compile it that many times? And it, mm-hmm, ended up being like 100 seconds.
Yeah.
And he did the same thing with Roslyn, and it was like 1.4 or something like that.
Right.
So it just completely, you know, decimated the performance of us shelling out and running compiler.
Yeah, one of the examples I always give, it's a little bit oversimplified, but the idea is that, you know, you've got some code on the disk, we read it up into memory, we compile it, and then we emit the DLL onto the disk,
and
which
then
we then turn around and pick up again.
Yes.
And then go and do stuff. If we can get that M to look more like an A-frame, we just go and get that and do it all in memory from that point.
Yeah, as we talk more about ASP.NET 5 later, mm-hmm. we'll talk about the fact that ASP.NET 5 is actually doing everything in memory. It's not touching the disk anymore.
Right, but to the point for people who are using ASP.NET web forms and that are doing things on the full framework, they can get the new language features. When you say Roslyn is the new compiler, that means it supports the newest version of C#. So C#'s got some new features.
And newest version of VB as well.
And newest version of VB. What is the number? Is it C# 6 and VB 6?
I'm not sure what the version numbers are.
I need to look that up. But there are new language features in VB and new language features in C#, both fully supported. So then you swap out the old code DOM provider for the new one, and your existing web forms apps can get speed benefits and language benefits.
Correct.
Cool.
Pretty cool.
So backing out a little bit and getting a little bit more technical. So one of the things that I always want to point out, and it's a little confusing, is that ASP.NET 4 runs fine on .NET Framework 4.6, but ASP.NET 5, it is the same framework running on both full framework CLR and the core CLR. It's not like there's different versions of ASP.NET now.
No, there's one ASP.NET 5 that runs on .NET Core, and the same ASP.NET 5 runs on .NET 4.6 as well. And the reasoning behind that is we know that there's a lot of people that already have applications that are taking advantage of all the functionality that's in the big framework. And we wanted to make it as easy as possible for you to port your application to ASP.NET 5. And that's why we make ASP.NET 5 support .NET 4.6. Mm-hmm. But if you want to try some of the features of .NET Core 5, meaning the cross-platform, mm-hmm. being able to complete run side-by-side, well, then you're going to use a smaller framework. And it means there might be some missing things, day one.
Right, like the example that I've been giving is, system.drawing.
System drawing.
So like, you need WPF and Windows Forms using the full framework. Maybe you've written an ASP.NET app that generates a pie chart, but it does it as a PNG.
Or makes thumbnails. I mean, a very common thing is an image comes into your site, you thumbnail it and do that. We've all done that for our sites before. You're probably using system drawing to do that. It doesn't exist here. You're going to have to go find a third-party library to go do that same functionality over here.
And we in the community are going to, hopefully solve that kind of a problem, that missing functionality as a team.
Right. I mean, another thing we also hear is with the betas and CTPs that we've done mm-hmm. is people ask, well, I found like data table is in .NET 4.6. Are you going to move it into .NET Core 5? And the answer is, when we first started the project, we could have tried to move everything. We don't have enough people to do that. Mm-hmm. But really, we need people to tell us what's important. And if there is something important, like if data tables are important, then we would probably just go take data tables out of 4.6, mm-hmm. put them into a NuGet package. So we're not going to put them in .NET Core 5.
Right.
We'll put them in a NuGet package that you can then load on top of .NET Core 5. And so we'll prevent that monolithic, creation of happening again. Mm-hmm.
And then when we see some demos, we'll also see that when you bring a NuGet package over like that, if you find a bug in it, you can then swap the NuGet package for the source code,
change
fix that,
yourself.
And keep going. So let's take a look at this and then circle those things that are open source, okay? So we've got all the runtime components. Honestly, a surprising number of things are open source. I personally didn't think that it was really going to happen. The jitter is going to be open source, the garbage collector, like it's all open source down there. All of Roslyn's open source, all the .NET Core 5 stuff. It seems to me that it's just the Windows stuff that's not open source, because it's harder to open source stuff if it's shipping in the Windows core. So for example, WPF WinForms, Universal Windows App, System.web. Why isn't System.web open source?
It is open source.
It is?
Yeah, it's in the GitHub account now.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah, When did that happen?
We did that in November, right after the Connect event.
Really?
Yes, we did.
Well, that's silly.
So it's sitting there for you.
Is it open source or source opened?
I would say it's source open.
I mean, we're not going to are we taking takebacks on it?
I don't think we're going to take takebacks on it at this point. So, I mean, the reality is the problem with like taking takebacks on some of those projects
sure.
is the backwards compat that we have for the 4.6 framework has to be so high because it's on over a billion machines. The impact of making a breaking change is super, super tough. And that's actually the reason that we made ASP.NET 4 and 5 open source and made them sit on top of the frameworks to give us that capability to rev them faster than the frameworks did and to let the customer choose which of these they want to use and not have that breaking change. I actually want to answer a couple of the questions that we saw up here.
Yeah, sure, please.
So one of them, what are the issues involved that prevent web forms from being able to be used with core CLR versus .NET 4.6? Mm-hmm. That came down to, we actually thought about this. What if we just try to take WebForms as it is and move it over to ASP.NET 5?
And when we say WebForms, we mean the WebForms programming model and then the system.web kind of historical baggage.
Well, what we would probably do is we would try to take WebForms off of the system web bottom part
right.
and do that. When we were building ASP.NET 5, one of our goals was to actually really try to have higher performance than we have today.
Mm-hmm.
And if we brought WebForms over, it would bring enough system web with it that we would lose some of these gains. And so an example of this is the HTTP context object.
Mm-hmm.
That thing is about 32K every time a request comes into ASP.NET.
So in memory, when someone says hello world, HTTP context.current
is 32K worth of data.
Mm-hmm.
In the ASP.NET 5 world, we knocked that payload down to about 5K.
Mm-hmm.
I can't bring WebForms over here without blowing that back up to 30K.
Otherwise, you'd have to have request 2 or some other request, and you wouldn't have any compatibility.
Right. And so we said, we actually could bring WebForms over here mm-hmm. and do what you just said. We could actually change some of the behaviors of it.
Right.
After we looked at how much behavior we would change, it would no longer be WebForms.
Right.
It would be some hybrid of WebForms that was not compatible with the WebForms you have today, but has a similar functionality set. And we're like, okay, that's like bricking you twice.
But remembering that if we just leave it where it is and continue to innovate on it in the extensibility points, like code DOM provider and things like that, we've still got async and await, we've still got model binding, we've still got the code DOM provider, and that it's totally compatible because it works today.
Exactly, we're doing new innovation here. We got code DOM provider, which gives you the new Roslyn.
Mm-hmm.
We have HTTP2 support that's coming. We have async model binding. We took it from MVC and moved it back into WebForms. So we're continuing to invest there, and we're going to get more bang for the buck as a team continuing to invest that way versus spending a 1 or 2 year effort porting it and then having it not even be the same thing as it was before we ported it.
Okay. There's another good question there.
Where is the code DOM provider for Roslyn compiler for WebForms? We do have a link for that. We'll have to go find one. It is out today.
Yeah, I know.
It's in the NuGet gallery today.
Let's go and bingle for that. Go ahead and find another.
While Scott's looking that up, with Xcopy deploying of ASP.NET 5, what controls access permissions, such as using the file system to snoop around directories on the web server? What controls access permissions, such as the file system? I guess the question is, does an ASP.NET 5 application have access to touch your server? And it's no different than it would be today. Once an ASP.NET application today actually has access under the account that it runs as to access as much of the system.
Well, I think an example would be when we worked on DOS blog 10 years ago, we had to go and explicitly put in write permissions into like a content folder so that when someone uploaded something,
right.
we wanted to write there. And it was an additional step. And it was kind of an IIS-ism, where IIS had to have permissions to that. Are there any things, has any of that
changed? We're still going to run ASP.NET 5 under IIS,
same
and
context.
Those same permissions are going to happen just like they do today. It's going to run under a particular lockdown user in IIS,
mm-hmm.
and your app's going to have access to whatever rights that that user has access to.
So switching back to the big screen here, up on the web dev blog in May of last year,
yeah.
so almost a year ago, we can see Damien Edwards announcing the Roslyn in ASP.NET. He talks about project compilation and runtime compilation. This is an important distinction here, right? This is the compiling of the CS files of your app, the code behind files or the controllers, and then the runtime compilation of your views. And you basically swap out the compiler for your project compilation, and you swap out the code DOM provider for your runtime. And he goes and explains all of that, and then here you've got the code DOM providers for Roslyn NuGet package that you can bring in and check that out now. And that is up on NuGet. Is there a non-pre version of that, I think would be the question.
I don't think there will be until we ship the product RTM.
So when we ship the product RTM, then that would become RTM as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it looks like that was from July of...
Yeah, that particular file was updated in July.
With revving things independently, what's the plan for maintaining doc on dependencies and compatibility between revs of various components? I think the best way to think of that is in a world where you have more packages,
mm-hmm.
we think that what we'll do is we'll ship a blessed set of stuff probably once a quarter.
Right.
And that'll be the blessed set that we do. That's technically what a DNX is today in the as we get more into the ASP.NET world is that'll be a we'll ship one of those about once a quarter, and that's kind of the bless.
Like a snapped version. And
yeah.
You say when you're using ASP.NET, you know, ASP.NET on .NET Core 5, here is the, you know, the 10, 12, whatever versions, and they all work great, and they're the most tested.
We make sure they're all tested together, and we ship one of those once a quarter. You're welcome to go outside of that and, mm-hmm. and party as much as you want, but we think a lot of companies will basically say, hey, I'm going to, you know, today companies kind of do this. There are some companies that take, I'm going to take whatever ships with Visual Studio, mm-hmm. and I'll stick to that. Then there's people that will take Visual Studio plus an update,
right.
and there's people that take Visual Studio plus an update plus an OOB. And I think those three models will still apply the same way.
You said an OOB. What is an OOB?
Out of band.
Yeah, just checking.
But I think, you know, the answer to that is it basically stay on one of our blessed sets
right.
That we'll ship once a quarter.
And that while other people might have private builds of MVC, or they might use the Nancy framework or other things, they might plug in different pieces. If you have that level of sophistication, then presumably you have that level of sophistication where you can debug those problems when you hit them as well.
Exactly. Another one here is one huge pain point with ASP.NET is hosting costs for our clients. So with version 5, we'll be able to build Windows/VS and just deploy to Linux web server. And the answer to that is yes. It's funny that when I hear that it's more expensive to host on Windows than it is on Linux because...
Is that true?
I don't think it's actually true. So one of the ways I think of it this way is if your company has a supported version of Linux, means you're paying a Linux provider, say Red Hat, to actually give you support, enterprise-level support.
Yeah.
We actually find that Windows and Linux are actually very similar in cost price. If you go download a distribution of Linux yourself and go manage it yourself and don't take security patches and stuff like that, yeah, in that world you can actually be on a cheaper support plan probably. But yeah, that's one of the goals of ASP.NET 5 and .NET Core 5 is basically you can run any of these applications on Windows, Mac, and Linux, and we're going to support those across the board.
So kind of taking what you said and extrapolating, and I'm just guessing here, that means if I wanted to, I could go in Visual Studio, right-click and go publish, and I could send this up to a Linux VM, maybe in Azure, or a Linux VM at some other cloud hoster, or a Windows VM in Azure, and it's going to run.
Yeah. We're gonna have a publish story for each of those operating systems, so you're going to be able to take a Windows machine mm-hmm. with VS, publish to a Linux server.
Right.
And you'll even be able to attach a debugger to that and remote debug on the Linux server.
So I'm going to be able to, from Visual Studio on Windows, debug into the core CLR running on Linux?
Yes.
All right, cool. As if it's just another remote thing.
Exactly. Just as far as we're going to consider it, it's a remote ASP.NET application. Just like today, you can take an ASP.NET application, put it up in Azure, and set breakpoints in Azure. We'll let you do that same thing on a Linux machine. And we're also looking at seeing if you can take from VS, maybe let you publish to a Docker mm-hmm. container as well. So if you actually want to build a Docker container and run your ASP.NET application in a container on a Linux machine, you could do that as well.
You heard it here. Let's go through a couple more slides and then we'll hit more, we'll do some demos. I got OmniSharp and stuff too, so we can talk about those things. So one of the things about open sourcing .NET is that you're gonna get not only fully supported cross-platform support, but you're gonna be able to do stuff that you didn't think about. Like you mentioned Docker. Being able to go in Visual Studio, debug, deploy not only to Linux, but potentially to Docker on Linux. You know, so we've got a whole bunch of people looking at Docker right now and making sure that you have a great experience. There are pre-release Docker files that you can mess with now.
Yeah, they're based on Mono right now. So there's some pre-release Docker files you can try out today. Mm-hmm. And they're based on Mono. And then, you know, a few months from now when we have, you know, an awesome .NET core running mm-hmm. on Linux, we'll swap the Mono for the Linux.
Absolutely. And then we'll show OmniSharp and different cross-platform IDEs because you're going to be able to pick not only your choice of operating system and your choice of runtime environment, but your choice of editor as well.
The cool thing that you didn't even talk about in the slide here is you will be able to actually go to our GitHub at some point and pull .NET Core 5 down and build it yourself.
So you're saying I'm going to be able to go just git clone, configure, make.
Yeah. You're going to be able to build your own version of .NET Core 5 that you run yourself on whatever platform you want to run it on.
That's cool. Let's get out of these slides so we can get to some demos and stuff like that. One thing I wanted to point out, though, this is a really great slide that I think Beth Massey put together that kind of talks about the different workflows here as you do things like making a Windows application that goes in the store or maybe goes on the phone and then putting an ASP.NET application out. So you've got your code, you've got your references to things that are going on in NuGet, you run that through Roslyn, and then you take that intermediate language, that IL, and you can send it up through the .NET native toolchain, which actually runs it through the C++ compiler and makes native executables that live up in the store and then get come down.
So that, people should realize this. That gives you the speed and power of C++ mm-hmm. with the convenience and usability of C#. So you write C# and you get C++ execution speed.
Yeah, absolutely. And then on the ASP.NET side, we're going to use the new Jitter and Roslyn to make things fast as well. So your cold startup time is going to be fast. And that's all going to run in the core CLR. And the thing that I always mention to people with the idea of using the core CLR is that your application's not going to break your buddy's application. One of the things that happens a lot is that, you know, he works in IT, I work in IT, he's on .NET 4.5.1, I'm on 4.5.2, we can't be on the same machine. And then we both together have to either reconcile our differences or fight with IT to...
Or the crazier thing is your IT comes in and decides they're going to go put 4.5.2 on the machine...
Without asking.
And without asking, and then some application breaks because of some, you know, version problem that exists. I want to call out something else about this. Mm-hmm. You're talking about .NET Native?
Yeah.
Our hope, I mean, we haven't shipped ASP.NET 5 yet, so this is, I'm kind of talking a year out, but our hope is to have .NET Native work for web in the future as well. So
really?
I would love to be able to say, hey, we already think that we can improve the performance of ASP.NET applications dramatically with ASP.NET 5, but I'd love to, a year from now, come in and mm-hmm. say, hey, now you can compile your ASP.NET 5 application with the C++ compiler.
Is it that much faster? Because there was a time in 2004, 2005, where we would all sit around and argue about whether C# was faster than VB, and we debunked that. But then, you know, with the new jitters and stuff, C# is darn near native speed already. Does this provide additional speed?
Well, you have to JIT down here. You're not JITing up here.
I see.
You're going to pay a JIT cost.
I see.
You're going to pay a cost of loading Roslyn. We have to do more work down here.
There are dynamic things that are happening.
There's dynamic things. For us to let you take a code file and just load it up in any editor, save it, and refresh your browser, we're going to do more mechanics than up here when you basically said, you can't do any of that stuff anymore because we've natively compiled the thing to a single exe.
Yeah, one of the, I know that this is not NGen, but one of the examples that I like to give is the idea that, you know, there's a billion machines out there. If I put a .NET application up in the cloud and I have everyone download it, like Baby Smash, all these native generators have to run a billion times, right?
Correct.
The work is happening on the endpoint. It could happen up at the top.
It's a shame that Habib's not here, because he could tell you there used to be bugs that we had where Windows Update would cause every Windows machine in the world to NGen. And they would NGen for like 25 and 30 minutes.
Well, what's nice about having a managed store or a managed server application is that you can do that work up front as part of your compilation process.
Way more controlled.
Way more controlled. And control is actually a theme kind of throughout this kind of stuff. So just a reminder, if you're going to take a picture of something and show your boss so they don't freak out, take a picture of this. ASP.NET 5 is one framework, and it runs on two different .NET frameworks. So you have choice. There is not multiple versions of ASP.NET 5.
Nope.
They're not cross-compiled. It's the same thing.
Same thing.
Okay.
Same code.
Just want to throw that out.
Go to GitHub. It's all the same code.
Isn't that cool, though? Like we need to write some docs, but at the same time, it is nice to go and say, oh, that line. That's what's going on there. Okay. Let's just bang through this real quick. I want to get some demos because this is too slide heavy. You know what I mean?
Well, we actually did more Q&A than we've done slides.
Well, that's a good point.
Why don't we just skip these and...
Okay, so let's just blah, blah, blah through all of this, and you guys can screenshot as you go. Blah, 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 history. Blah, 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 feature goals.
I think one of the, we can talk to this one slide and we'll skip the drill
and
down
yada,
slides.
Yada, yada, yada through the rest?
You know, the totally modular. So this is a core concept of ASP.NET 5, which is today... System web is kind of monolithic, meaning that you get all of it turned on by default. With ASP.NET 5, one of our goals is to let you basically say, sometimes I want to load a framework, sometimes I want to have routing, sometimes I just want to have a request come right to a raw socket and have no framework run at all. This is the canonical Node.js versus ASP.NET example. It's like, hey, I took this Node app, and the entry point is given a socket, and I do some work, and it's faster than ASP.NET. Well, yeah, we didn't load MVC, we didn't load a router, we didn't load all this kind of stuff. We're going to give you that capability. Faster development cycle. This is about if you're in Visual Studio or you're in a text editor, what is the cycle from making a code change and refreshing your browser and seeing that pop happen?
Mm-hmm.
Our goal is to cut that in half of from what it is today. Hmm. Today it ends up being 8 or 9 seconds. If we could get that down to, I think, two or three seconds, we'd feel pretty happy. Once again, developer productivity. Choose your editor and tools. Scott's going to show this. Once you start moving .NET Core 5 and ASP.NET to Linux and Mac.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how do you edit and work on those platforms? That's a core concept of why ASP.NET 5 is able to compile itself. We can't expect to have Visual Studio on all those platforms, and so an ASP.NET 5 application can compile itself It's binary, you know, it's CS files, it's markup files, can all be compiled by itself, and that's a core thing, so we can actually let you edit in whatever tool you want. Seamless transition from on-premise to cloud. You know, we work in the cloud team.
Yeah.
Our goal is to make ASP.NET the best platform for building cloud apps. And so a lot of this is making it easier to take your existing ASP.NET application, move it to the cloud, and not make a bunch of code changes to do that.
Right.
And that's what that's about. Open source, we've already talked about that. We think, you know, that is the future of the world, open source. We're there. We're doing it. And then cross-platform. Mm-hmm. We know that people, you know, have environments now with data centers that are made up of Windows machines and Linux machines. We want you to be able to run your ASP.NET applications right on all those environments.
Like I like to say, reality is a hybrid.
Exactly.
So we're embracing reality.
And then we want to be fast. I mean, one of the goals, as I was saying before, is if you look at System Web and that HTTP context object, when I knock that from 30K to 5 or 6K, well, that's a lot less pressure on the garbage collector.
Right.
I can do more requests per seconds. We want to be faster. So we want to make ASP.NET fast to load, fast to develop on, fast to serve pages.
And one of the things that I do want to point out also, though, is that for those of you who are fans, who are watching this, who enjoy getting on the bleeding edge, you're seeing everything. You're seeing warts and all. You're seeing things get renamed. You're seeing stuff break. This may or may not shake your confidence, but I want to remind you that you are literally watching the sausage get made. We are letting you see what's going on in a way that Microsoft has never done before. You're seeing commits from the actual live devs happen on GitHub.
Yeah, normally we would just do this in secrecy for 2 years and then show up one day and go pow and go, are you excited?
Right.
And that's not the goal anymore.
Right, because we want to get it right. So, you know, in the future, the goal, and I always use this theoretical 15-year-old who is going to learn web development. I want them to sit down on any machine, whatever machine they have, might be a Windows machine, might be an Ubuntu machine, and they're going to have whatever text editor, might be a free version of Visual Studio, might be text edit, and I want to figure out how few clicks can we get it down so they can acquire .NET, and how quickly can they get Hello World running? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think you're going to find that in this new world, we're going to be able to get you on get .NET on your machine in under 15, 20 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be able to, it's going to take two or three commands from a command prompt to get it on your machine.
Right.
And your first app's going to be running 30 seconds later. And so the acquisition, instead of being, you know, 1.5 gigs of stuff, half an hour install.
Reboot,
yeah, maybe, will end up being super, super fast. I think it's exciting for .NET, and I think it's exciting for ASP.NET because I think we're going to be able to open our customers up. I think you're going to be able to have a college course where, hey, the guy sitting on a Mac can download ASP.NET in 30 seconds. It doesn't require admin privileges on his machine. And when he's done, he can just delete the folder and move on if he doesn't like it.
And then we're competing on a level playing field with the Rubies and the Pythons and the Nodes and the Javas, and .NET is then in that conversation.
I think maybe it's not even a playing field. Maybe it's just if you like C Sharp, you use ASP.NET.
Mm-hmm.
If you like Ruby, you use Rails. I think that's use what makes you happy. I think what it comes down to is we're going to make C Sharp and .NET and ASP.NET available to a lot more people.
Now some people might say that this is a dramatic shift in Microsoft thinking, but I've worked here for, this is my 7th year actually. It feels like 5, but it's been 7. My thinking hasn't changed. I've known you. You've been my boss for years now. Your thinking hasn't changed.
The reality is a lot of what we're doing right now, a bunch of us got together in 2007 and we were all kind of having some beers and saying, what if we could do this?
Mm.
And this is kind of the envisioning of what we actually were kind of said, we'll never be allowed to do it.
Let's talk about it anyway.
But we'd love to do it. Talking to Phil Hack.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, after he left, he's like, gosh, you guys are doing all the stuff we talked about.
Yeah, and one of the great things about .NET Conf is that we're going to bring these people to talk about this stuff. So we're going to have people from the .NET Core team. When people might feel like this has happened in the last year, no, this has happened in the last 7 years, last 10 years, there have been people who have been passionate about open source for years at Microsoft, and now they're finally getting their time.
Well, I think the cloud is what's changing all this. I mean, the reality is we have the Azure cloud. Mm-hmm. In the Azure cloud, you can run Windows, you can run Linux.
Yep.
We don't care.
Yep.
And we just want to give you the best tools and frameworks and stuff to build apps in the cloud.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now we can skip all these
blah 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 blah. Oh, I like the. I know you don't like these slides, but I like these slides.
It's
so this is my. It is complicated, but I like the people love this stuff. The people want to see the internal. So click 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 click. Boom.
Okay. A wall of text.
This is a wall. Trust me. People love this. I'm going to do this little bit. You watch. They're going to tweet him that he hates these slides. On the left side here is the kind of the how it works today. You know, the operating system is Windows. You know, the .NET CLR is your runtime, and you serve these applications on IIS. The today slash future is a much brighter one. It's actually so bright that it's orange and green, because I have no abilities with slides. You can pick whatever operating system you want, and then the runtime loader is the .NET environment, the .NET Environment Manager, DNX, and you can pick your web server. Everything comes in via NuGet, including the base class libraries and stuff. It's all going to come in on NuGet. So this is one that people like to screenshot and show their boss and say, look, this is what's happening. I know you hate it. Click, 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 blah, blah, blah. Do you want to look at any of these?
Nope.
No. Let's get into some actual code. Yada, yada, yada. And these are marketing looking people here. This is a bunch of stuff here. All right, let's get into some stuff. So here
That's
we can
a lot
see
of slides.
My
slides. We had at least 20 more slides.
Yeah, slides. All right, let's look at a couple of cool things here. So if I go into Visual Studio, this is I'm running the CTP. This is CTP 6, the public CTP. And this dialog box is going to change, and we're actually talking about the icons. Have you seen the new icons with the 5?
Yeah, I have.
They're pretty cool. Let's go and make a starter application here. And we're going to get a new application. And in Solution Explorer, we're going to see a couple of things that are not necessarily familiar. On the right-hand side here, this is all going to happen asynchronously here. And here we've got our little help bits here. Notice it actually says restoring. Let me zoom in on that. Oh, it already went by.
Yeah, it's already done.
So remember how we said that ASP.NET is going to refer to can target rather either framework. Now this text is all going to change. We're actually deep in the arguments right now about should these be one thing or two things? Should they be named differently? This will probably say DNX. Something's going to change. So don't worry too much about the details. But the point is this application is referencing both the full framework and the core framework. And one of the things, I really like these icons, by the way, because it tells you what's coming in on NuGet and then what is, in fact, a local item or a different reference. And you can go and see the complete hierarchy.
Yeah, all the way down to the middle.
Yeah. So this is a much, much improved references dialog. And in fact, I can right-click on that and get an all-new NuGet management as well. This is now modeless, and I've got a lot more control over what I want to pick, including control over versioning, as well as, this is a nice improvement down here, because I used to have to do this in text, what my dependency behaviors are, whether or not I want to go for patches and stuff.
Yep.
So a lot of cool stuff going on with NuGet, because NuGet is going to be behind a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, this is the first time we've had NuGet in the references node. So.
Mm-hmm. Now, in the global JSON here, this is real basic. It's just showing me that I'm using beta 3.
This shows your min version that your mm-hmm. application depends on. So
right.
If you actually had installed beta 4.
Which I actually have.
Your application, you know.
I actually pinned it. So I installed beta 4, but I went in here and said, I don't want this application to get upgraded.
Yeah, what this means is if the machine has beta 3, you'll run beta 3. If mm-hmm. it does not have beta 3, it'll pick whatever you have on the machine.
Exactly. Now I typed in KVM list. In the future, we'll type DNVM or whatever the new mechanism is. But you can see down here the location of those runtimes. That'll show up in a folder called DNX in the future. But here, to your point from before, where is the framework? There it is. There's one. Let's look at the core CLR, in fact. There's the 64-bit one. Let's look at the x86 sequence, a little bit smaller. So here is the NuGet package with the core CLR itself. Right now, it looks like it's about 13 megs. So that's everything inside there.
Yep.
And that's just a zip file, remember? I can go and look inside there and see the binaries. So you're getting your own private build of the core CLR. Check it out. You got the core CLR, and then you've got all the other support. Yeah, look at the pieces there. Look at the sizes.
That's the big one.
Yeah, there's about 3 megs. You've got the KLR, that'll become DNX in the future, and the host, and then you've got Roslyn all inside of that. So what this means is that if to that example we had before about two different applications within IT, you have your own private build of the .NET framework, and if I upgrade or fork the framework itself, I can't break you.
Right.
That's very, very important. That's even more important with a cloud scenario.
Yeah, exactly. That is one of the huge promises of this new style, is no longer does one application affect other applications on the machine.
Mm-hmm. Now, when I right-click here and say open in File Explorer, let's see if I can go and build this. I'll just go and say build solution, right? That's how you build stuff, isn't it?
I was going to say find that bin folder.
So where is my bin folder? So why do I have no bin folder? What's going on?
Compiles memory.
So build, Control-Shift-B, is really more of a spell checker. It's checking for errors.
Yeah, it says basically go check and make sure I didn't screw up somewhere in my code.
Mm-hmm.
Every time we show somebody that there is no bin folder, I do want to say we will have a capability where you can actually take your application, pre-compile it, and put it up as well. We know that people want to pre-compile applications, and so we have full support from the tool set to let you pre-compile your application before you copy it up to your host.
Yeah, it's a fun demo, but it freaks people out. There'll be some kind of a way here, and this is interesting. I finally figured this out because there's a lot of different verbs that we're arguing about right now. Build and package, but here's the deal. You might want to build this into a DLL and emit that DLL just as before, and that's web application 5. You might want to turn it into a NuGet package and then give it to someone, and then they use it in another process. Or you might want to prepare it for publishing. So there's kind of multiple levels. There's emitting the DLL, there's emitting the NuGet, packaging it, and then there's the actual publishing, which would bring everything required, the entire dependency chain, right?
Yep.
So if I run this one, I want to point out a couple of things, actually, while I'm bringing that up. What's going on in here? This is a new menu that's got all these things pulled into one place. You see, I can run this on IIS Express. I can pick my web browser. I can pick my CLR. But you see this text right here. That text is coming from here. We've got extensibility really at every level. And I can go and say, call the web command, and it will run it under ASP.NET hosting. I can do self-hosting. Or in the context of what I just did, I can run it under IIS Express. So this is running under IIS Express. Here's IIS Express in the corner. See that? And I'm on port 53084. Now I'm going to close that. IIS Express is gone. And I'll pick web instead. And hit build. Now a command prompt opened up. And now I'm on port 5000. What's going on here?
So now you're running it outside the context of IIS. You're basically running this from the command prompt without the aid of IIS, which is very cool because this allows you, this means that we're host agnostic now. ASP.NET used to be bolted directly to IIS and it could only run inside of IIS. Now you can run it outside, which is super important as we want to move to things like Mac and Linux where I want to run it, you know, on different platforms. I do want to call out, you know, we think for Windows customers, we think IIS is still the best way to run ASP.NET applications. A lot of folks think that, IIS gives me the speed penalty. Levi Broderick on our team has said many, many times and proven to a lot of us internally, it's like less than 1% is what you lose running inside of IIS.
Mm-hmm.
But you get a bunch of benefits. IIS will actually watch your process. If it dies, it will restart it.
Mm-hmm.
It will watch your process and see if your memory is running out of control, and if it's so, it'll restart you. So there's a variety of checks inside of IIS. Plus, it provides a huge pile of features like URL rewriting and a bunch of other stuff that you would not get if you go run in a self-host environment like this.
Right. It's acting as kind of a component container. It's upstream.
Yeah.
Very common thing to do with things like Node and Rails. They have a reverse proxy relationship.
Yes.
IIS can fulfill that relationship now.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, within here, this is my project.json. We've got an all-new project model here. And I can edit these myself, and you'll notice that I'm getting IntelliSense, and I'm going up to...
So this used to be the equivalent of packages.config.
Ah.
That's, you know, as you're showing this, you're basically, imagine looking at a list of NuGet packages that my application depends on,
right,
which is what packages.config was before. This is now project.json, and what Scott's showing us is we now have IntelliSense inside of packages.config style files, where You're getting full intelligence showing you what's on your machine, what's in the cloud, you can actually do searches.
And what I like about this is kind of a, and you know, tell me if I'm overstepping here, but I feel like there is a recognition that there's a class of people who want to spend their time in the text editor.
Yes.
And there's a class of people who want to spend their time over in Solution Explorer. And we're supporting both.
Both. For the first time, we're supporting both.
Right. So if I wanted to add this Microsoft Framework logging and hit save, I just hit save. And now it says restoring. And it's going off and it's figuring out what it needs to do. And now it's bringing that logging framework in. And then if I simply remove that line, again, I could have done all of this with the GUI, could have done all of this with the interface, and I hit save, and then it goes away. It's automatic.
Yeah, well, a big thing you should point out is what you're doing, is VS is not doing that work. ASP.NET 5 is doing the work.
Right.
Meaning that if you were using Notepad on the command line, you would get similar behaviors. I mean, you have to run a command line tool to actually have it do the restore for you, but the point is, you don't have to have Visual Studio doing the work for you anymore. And
so that actually brings up an interesting point. Let's do this. If I'll come out to the desktop here, right?
Yeah.
And we'll say yo ASP.NET, and this is using the Yeoman generator, which is actually based on Node.
Yeah, so if people don't know, Yeoman is a scaffolding tool for command line people. And so what it basically does is you'll type yo ASP.NET, and it'll go and build you a template to have a getting started ASP.NET application.
Right.
Machine.
And this is actually going to be running the Node framework here. A lot of people get a little bit concerned because they wonder what is the relationship. Well, there's Node as it is a web framework, and there is Node, the kind of generic way to run JavaScript at the command line. And that's how we're using that. So here is the Yeoman.
By the way, it's no different than using C++ apps to run ASP.NET applications.
Absolutely.
I mean, who cares what language.
So here I could say a Nancy ASP.NET application. So that's an alternate web stack. I could make a web app here, and we'll call it Super Fancy Pants 2. And hit enter, and then that went and generated that, okay? So now, look at that. It says, your project is now created. You can use the following commands. Now, these commands, again, are going to change because the .NET execution environment is the new name. But we'll go into Super Fancy Pants, and I can say KPM
RPM.
KPM, rather, pardon me, restore. And then it goes and it calls NuGet. Now, you notice that was all cached. We've got smarter NuGet. And it's getting smarter every week.
So when you save that project.json file, technically Visual Studio was going out and running the restore command for you.
Right. It was calling this quietly in the background.
It was.
Exactly. Now here, we're ending up talking to NPM as well, because you're going to use NuGet for your server-side libraries, and Bower for your client-side, and then NPM for any additional tools or some client-side libraries.
If you're going to run anything through Grunt or Gulp, you're going to use NPM to get those tools.
Right. And there we go. So now we're running Bower. This is kind of like, this is your build, right? This is your MS build, but this includes both server-side and client-side things to think about. So now I can go and say kweb, but before I do that, I'm just gonna go to the command line here and I'm gonna say, let's look at project.json. And we see that we have Kestrel, which is a cross-platform web server based on libuv, and that's gonna be on port
5004. It's just a host.
Yep.
The way to think of it is it's a host that can host ASP.NET application.
So I'll say kkestrel, and we'll say localhost 5004. Oops. I always think it's so funny that a search engine would want ever to search for the word localhost.
Yes. Yeah.
So now I'm running that here, locally, under Kestrel. And I haven't used Visual Studio at all.
The cool thing is, the flow you're showing today, this flow would work on a Mac or a Linux machine.
I did it on my Raspberry Pi just last week. Worked great. So the other thing I could do is I could go to OmniSharp, and OmniSharp is a community project, and there's a bunch of people on that project, including Jason Immison and Jonathan Channon, who've done some amazing work. You can go and check out OmniSharp. This is not a Microsoft thing, but we at Microsoft dig it, and I'm helping, and Sayed Hashimi are helping.
Yeah, so, I think we're contributing to it as well. So
we've got some people from the Monaco team helping out. So I want to make sure people understand that it's not Microsoft sponsored. But because in the world of open source, we can do that. I've got one foot in the company, and I got another foot in a project like this. This lets you do cross-platform development in Sublime, in Atom, in Emacs, in Brackets, in Vim. There are the members of the team. Okay, so here's what we can potentially do. Let me open up Sublime. and I'm looking at account controller in a regular old MVC application, and I'm going to actually hit control tilde, and you can notice here a server launched up on a high port. That server is going to be watching for IntelliSense. So when I type I and then hit dot, you see that little flash right there, I dot? It knows that Scott set as a var is in fact a string. But if I change that to an int and type I dot, I didn't save. Roslyn knows, because Roslyn's running in the background.
Well, I think the point we're trying to make here is we're getting IntelliSense outside of Visual Studio. So now I can be in a text editor like Sublime and actually get IntelliSense for my ASP.NET application due to the OmniSharp project.
Exactly. And then I can do the exact same thing in Atom. So here is the Atom editor. And, of course, any other editor that makes you happy. And if I go and hit, I think it's Control-Alt. Oops. I can never remember if it's Control-Shift-O or Control-Alt-O. Notice down there, there's the OmniSharp flame.
Yep.
That's starting up OmniSharp, and now it's going.
It's ready to go.
And we get the exact same experience inside of here. And we're going to just continue to iterate on this so then you can go and run things like the K-Web and all those kinds of things from here and get a great experience. This is really IntelliSense, and also additional IDE features like format document and go-to definition.
I think this answers the question about people ask, are you going to port Visual Studio to Mac or Linux?
We're going to bring Visual Studio-like functionality
to editors that people on Mac and Linux would actually use.
Exactly, things that you are going to enjoy. So let's do some questions as we wrap up the last few minutes here.
Will there be a migration tool to migrate from ASP.NET 4 MVC 4 plus Unity to ASP.NET 5 MVC 5? We plan to have a tool that will help you, meaning that it will go look at your references and go build you a project.json that would try to reference the right things based on that. But we don't think we're going to go try to go read your code and modify your code. So we're thinking of a tool that might actually convert your project, your CS proj, to a new project, convert your references to project.json, and probably give you a series of warnings of things that you need to go fix and change in your application. I think that's going to be the level of a migration tool, because that's about all we can do. Anything else would be fake. We don't want to go analyze your source code and try to guess. Mm-hmm. And so the easiest way to be ready to move to the ASP.NET 5 world is to be on the latest version of MVC, the latest version of Web API, and be using those technologies, because those are the ones that are going to move the easiest over to ASP.NET 5.
And remember that there's a move to ASP.NET 5 and then an optional move to the core CLR. So you may be doing things and you may find that the full framework does what you need to do, so you want to stay there.
Right. Another one we had there is, what new features introduced in .NET Core 5 which are not in .NET 4.6?
That's a great question, because core is like the smaller kind of core bit. Does it do stuff that the bigger one doesn't do?
I'm sure it does. I'm not aware of what those things are now. We haven't been focusing on that aspect of it. We've been thinking more of what's in 4.6 that's not in 5.
Yeah.
And what stuff do we need to move and make available as NuGet packages? I don't think we've thought of.
That's a great question. When we have the .NET Core deep dive, we'll try to get that answered.
Yeah, we should ask that question. I'm sure there's some stuff down there that's new.
A couple more, just a few minutes left.
Will .NET Core 5 run on older versions of Windows Server, specifically Windows Server 2003?
That is a 12, almost 13-year-old server.
Not supported server as well. So
not
Windows Server 2003, I believe, is out of support now. We will let you run .NET Core 5 applications on Windows Server 2008 R2 and above.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically Windows 7 and above, technically, or is I think the baseline.
And if he really feels so strongly about it, he wants to try to get it to build, good luck, but he's doing it on an unsupported operating system.
Correct. I mean,
it's open source,
it is
not GitHub.
You can pull it down and try to make it work. Will on-premise apps see less benefits in any way compared to their cloud counterparts in ASP.NET 5? No. I mean,
well, there's also the Azure pack. You can have your own cloud on-premise if you like.
But there's no plan to put cloud features in that would not be on-premise features. I mean, most of the cloud features we have today are taking on-premise features and making them work better in the cloud. Things like session state and cache, not the other way around.
All right. How about the last one there about Owen and Katana?
I was going to say, what web server will ASP.NET 5 be hosted on OS X and Linux?
Oh, what web server? Yeah, so on that one, again, Kestrel is the libuv-based cross-platform one, but you wouldn't put that on the necessarily the open internet. You would front it with Apache or Nginx.
Yeah, exactly. You'd probably run Nginx and run it behind it the same way that you would run something like Node behind it.
Yep.
And Dan Roth and our team right now is actually writing the doc or working on the doc describing
how to do exactly that.
And how to put the things in to reboot the application when it stops, and how to make sure the application boots up when you cold start the machine.
Last question here. Great question from Muhammad Nawaz, who's saying, what's the best thing about ASP.NET 5? That's a softball question. It's open source. I think that's what the best thing is.
I think that it runs cross-platform.
Really?
Yeah. And, well, or if I'm a Windows person, I think it's that it runs side by side. It just depends on what hat I'm wearing to what thing is the coolest thing.
All right, we're going to take a 5-minute break, and we're going to come back with more .NET Conf. Remember, we got 2 full days of great content, and it's all recorded. So be sure to tell your friends, and if you feel like you got to stay up, don't worry. Go to sleep. You can watch this. We're recording the entire day. Thanks so much.
Thank you.